the Gospel of John, chapter 3, verses 16 to 18. God so loved the world that he gave his only Son so that everyone who believes in him might not perish, but might have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. Whoever believes in him will not be condemned, but whoever does not believe has already been condemned, because he has not believed in the name of the only Son. So the Gospel of the Lord. Father's Day and the Feast of the Holy Trinity provide some congenial topics for our thoughts today. In the Gospel, Nicodemus, a well-disposed Pharisee, comes to Jesus at night. And we're presented with more than just the ending of a conversation in the Gospel. About halfway, at the halfway point, the author is no longer just recalling this conversation, but really begins to speak to the member of John's congregation. And his words expand into the beautiful affirmation of God's love for the world. Reminded by a most convincing voice that God sent his Son into the world not to condemn it, but so that the world might be saved. And the word saved may remind us of some unhappy religious jargon. What's the Creator's real intent in all of this? It is to call us to life through belief in the Son and lead us into an everlasting union with God the Father for all time. As we reflect on this invitation, we're reminded that our deepest longings and highest aspirations can only know complete fulfillment if we're taken up into the very life and love of God. This is a shocking realization. It would seem that for all intents and purposes, we could find satisfaction on a much more modest and lower level. I think it takes the experience of a lifetime to come to the knowledge that ultimately we can only know perfect happiness by moving into the vast and marvelous intimacy of the life of the Trinity. God's life and love spilling over in creative abundance and lifting us into the direct experience of the divine beauty. This seems like a far cry from the judgmental mechanics of being saved. Nicodemus' problems are not unfamiliar to us. He's a cautious man who wants the good of religion, but all on the outside. He's not really sure that he wants that inner transformation, the emotional risks that this journey to God entails. Nicodemus would remain something of a spectator, keeping a certain cautious distance from religious transformation. His challenge sets up a certain resonance with the task of being a successful father. In my understanding of the role, a father spends his life so that new life may flourish. If anything, he risks this inner transformation. A good father dares to ask some of the right questions and is not put off by failure. Perhaps a very good father may not be successful in the world's eyes. However, he still has his values right, and he stays with questions of substance. How many times have we seen a father risk his health in a dangerous occupation just so that he would have the necessary resources for his children? One time in our parish dinner for the poor in Seattle, there was an incident which brought home to me the qualities of a really great father. In the line waiting to be served a meal, a very large man pulled out a magnum pistol and slapped the person in line behind him on the side of the head. The smaller man who was struck was there with his wife and a baby in a stroller. Everyone was shocked. Pat Campbell, who was running the dinner called a feed-in, was an older man and just average size, but he went right up into the face of that angry man and said, "Sir, we don't do that here. You'll have to put the gun away." In his career in the Navy, Pat had been a labor negotiator, and he was able to defuse the situation. 20 minutes later, as I was on my way to the parish hall, the big man was spread-eagled on the sidewalk with three cops pointing their pistols at him over the hoods of police cars. They disarmed him and led him away. Pat was a father to the homeless, the hungry, needy people who came by the parish for food every Sunday. An unexpected father to the man in distress and the many people who were in need. Smiley would say to the volunteers in the serving line, giving dignity along with some very well-prepared food. He didn't have many success stories at the feed-in, but I think that Pat was a father to these people in need, and perhaps even more so to those who volunteered to prepare and serve the dinners. These experiences kept some of the right questions before us. Not that we would be rewarded for being do-gooders, but that we'd be blessed by the presence of God in the hearts and sufferings of the very people being served. Christ is really present here. And we encounter the broad and generous scope of the Creator's own life welling up in the most extraordinary places, those in desperate need. No easy answers here, very few successes, but an encounter nonetheless with that Son whom God has sent into the world. We love our fathers because even in difficult times they keep us connected with God's self-disclosure, even in the most ordinary people. The richness of this experience is a direct reflection of the mystery of God's inner life that we are learning to call the Trinity. And so today, in this climate of praise, we also remember and honor our fathers.